The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is That's a Laugh. For the next half hour, I'll be reading excerpts of funny stories, quotes, and other anecdotes from various sources that we hope will add a few chuckles to your day. My dear listeners, a brand new year is nigh upon us. Whether you are hoping for the opportunity that comes with every new 12 months, or just the chance to finally be rid of this year, we will soon have the official occasion to start anew. But you don't really have to wait until the beginning of a new year to start fresh, nor do you have to wait for a new month, not even a new week. Every day contains moments full of opportunity. Even reading an introduction or foreword to a new book can set change in motion. The author or sponsor almost always regales the reader with a meaningful story of how their perspective shifted in ways they never expected. Today's show is chock full of those introductions. Inspiring stories that not only reveal how the idea for the book came about, but that so many moments in life can grant the same power as the start of a new calendar. First, we'll hear from That's a Laugh favorites, Whoopi Goldberg and Jim Gaffigan. Then, in line with our theme of new beginnings, TAL show newbies Jeannie Gaffigan and Issa Rae. To start us off, these quotes from EverydayPower.com offer great perspective on not waiting to make a change. From actor Kyle Chandler, "Opportunity does not knock. It presents itself when you beat down the door." And from American novelist Jack London, "You can't wait for inspiration. You have to go after it with a club." Our first introduction story is a foreword written by Whoopi Goldberg from her book, Is It Me or Is It Nuts Out There?, published in 2010. Foreword, Rude Awakening. First of all, thanks for picking up this book. I'm sure the cover got your attention, too. That was the point. Now that you've done so, you may be wondering, what the hell? Which is one of the names I had for this. Some of the others were Uncivil Liberties, which no one got, or If You're in Confession, You Can't Have an Autograph, which everyone said sounded like a prissy book by a celebrity. And then Is It Just Me came into being because it really does say it all. As it turns out, it isn't just me. When I asked different people what was bugging them, it turned out that it was the same stuff bugging me, and I knew what I wanted to write. Somehow, so many little pieces of courtesy have gone by the wayside. People in your face, in your business, not caring if they are invading your space, being disrespectfully loud. Thoughtlessness is the new manners, and I've got to say I don't like it. Now, I'm guilty of some of those things, but I'm aware of it, so I try not to share my cell phone conversations with everyone. I try to remember to say please and thank you, all the things my mom taught me to do, that I don't do anymore. But if I'm slacking on it, and if you're slacking on it, and everyone else is slacking on it, well, you can see just how we may have gotten ourselves to the point of I'm annoyed / you're annoyed. So, over the last year, there were days when I remembered to write things down that struck me. Many are written here. They cover the map of my mind, unleashed on you the way they appear in my head. Little things, the way I can comment on them in a book but not on TV. In no particular order. Oh, and I don't necessarily have any answers guaranteed to work for anyone. I can just hear you saying, "Geez, Whoop, your head's up your butt." Or, "Hey, Whoop, that's interesting." But either way, you might as well get this book, because that guy over there just sneezed and didn't cover his mouth, and the look on your face says, "No, Whoop, it's not just you." Whoopi, East Coast, May 12th, 2010. Interesting how inspiration for a book hits, isn't it? Next, let's hear Jeannie Gaffigan's inspiring story of how a would-be tragedy led to a life-altering shift in perspective. From her book, When Life Gives You Pears, The Healing Power of Family, Faith, and Funny People, published in 2019. Introduction by Jeannie Gaffigan with a foreword from her husband, Jim Gaffigan. When I was asked to write the foreword for When Life Gives You Pears, which happens to be written by my wife, Jeannie, who is also the mother of my 5 children and my writing partner of 7 comedy specials, 2 New York Best Time Sellers, and 1 television series, The Jim Gaffigan Show, I had only one question. How much are you going to pay me? Well, it turns out these forward things pay like nothing. I know. Insane, right? So I guess my primary motivation for writing this has to be because Jeannie Gaffigan is loving, kind, caring, smart, and beautiful. I am excited for as many people as possible to read the story of this incredible woman who writes with such humor and vulnerability about a time when she and I feared things were not going to be good. Not good at all. After having traveled down this path with my own family, I have come to realize that so many of us have gone through a loved one's life or death medical crisis, but those accounts of how they kept themselves sane during such a scary time are rarely shared publicly. I wish I had a book like this book prior to going on our own journey. I've never been one for hero worship. It's always struck me as immature or naive. Humans are, after all, human, and tend to disappoint. Yet, there is always one exception to every rule. If there was one person who has lived up to the hype and the grand expectations, it would be Jeannie. Of course, I'm biased, but Jeannie has consistently left me in awe. This memoir brings to life some of that Jeannie magic that has dazzled her friends, family, and any community she has interacted with since her arrival on this planet, and somehow perfectly captures the unstoppable woman I have laughed with, loved, and fought with for the last 20 years. There have been countless moments when I've been enchanted by the life force that is Jeannie. I'm not even referring to the bravery and tenacity she displayed in the face of the pear-shaped brain tumor and the seemingly endless recovery that this book so hysterically chronicles. I'm talking about the innumerable times when I've involuntarily mumbled, "Oh my God," under my breath from a sincere bewilderment at who this human is and what she can accomplish. This book brings to life some of that Jeannie magic, which has dazzled her family, friends, and any community she has interacted with since her arrival on this planet. I met Jeannie in her early 30s. After years of failure and frustration, I had finally found a cynical confidence and was ready to pursue a life focused on my career and only my career. Yet with Jeannie, I was instantly smitten. Like most people when they first meet her, I assumed she was a decade younger than her age and clearly in need of deep breathing exercises. But I couldn't stop thinking about her. I pursued her, and the more I pursued, the more I was left mumbling, "Oh my God." Here was the first time. Jeannie and I had gone on one lunch date prior to me arriving at the St. Patrick's Youth Center on a spring afternoon. She had explained to me, while sharing some overpriced eggs the day before, that she was running a not-for-profit called Shakespeare on the Playground. I assumed she was another struggling New York City actor teaching some kids to fill some downtime between inevitable rejections. She invited me to stop by sometime, so I reluctantly went to the next day's rehearsal to check it out. What I encountered stunned me. It wasn't a few kids. It was literally 100 middle schoolers. And these weren't kids holding tap shoes and filled with theater dreams. These were street smart kids from the nearby city projects who probably had never even been inside a Broadway theater, or any other one for that matter. I looked around the room through the sea of children for any helpers, and saw two weary adult volunteers from the theater world that Jeannie had caught up in the tornado that was to be my future life partner. I watched as this human cyclone choreographed and inspired the whole operation. There was no support from the school, no national organization behind her. Jeannie, the unemployed actress who did catering jobs most nights, was even paying for the kids' snacks. Most impressively, the kids were engaged, interested, and having fun. Jeannie somehow thrived and excelled in the chaos. I had never seen anything like it. Her selfless service to these children made my cynicism melt away immediately. I remember observing her orchestrate the madness of humanity and thought, this woman can do anything. Maybe she can make me a better man. Maybe that's important. Maybe that's even more important than my career. Well, long story short, Jeannie did not make me a better man. Some things are impossible. Okay, fine. The reality is that Jeannie's influence on my life and career have been immeasurable. I guess in a way, I'm like one of the middle schoolers in the St. Patrick's Youth Center that Jeannie shaped. A rebellious kid with a little bit of Jeannie good in me. As you read this story that she so generously shares, I hope that you get to experience a little bit of that for yourself. Introduction. Don't you hate it when you have perfected a magnificent schedule and then suddenly you get interrupted by an enormous brain tumor? That totally sucks, right? As an overwhelmed mother of five with a touring comedian husband and a career as a writer and executive producer, I already felt that one more thing would be the wafer-thin mint that made me explode. The surreal diagnosis of a life-threatening pear-sized mass in my brain that required an urgent craniotomy, with absolutely no idea of what kind of life I would be facing afterward, was something that I hadn't exactly left room for in my daily itinerary. As a self-confessed control freak, I had to face the fact that I was confronted with something completely out of my control. Ironically, Tumorgate turned out to be the catalyst for the radical revolution I desperately needed to reconstruct my priorities. As I am now making my journey through the recovery process, rather than asking, why did this earthquake destroy my house? I find myself saying, awesome, I needed to get rid of a lot of that old junk anyway, and wow, everyone, thanks for helping me build the new home of my dreams. Here I reflect on how this potentially tragic prognosis strengthened my faith in God, deepened my love for family and friends, and renewed my hope in humanity. So what I'm saying is that it's light reading. By the end, you'll be all, boo-hoo, I want a brain tumor too. Of course, you don't have to have a brain tumor to come along on my journey. I hope my story will be valuable to everyone because life as we know it and as we have become comfortable with does not last forever. Folks who already have their priorities straight and who find love and gratitude in every little moment may be like, yep, this book affirms all of my beliefs, but I don't find it redundant because this girl is kind of funny. And for those people who are all like, why would I want to read a book about a disgusting brain tumor? It's never going to happen to me. I would say, maybe it's not going to be a brain tumor, but it's going to be something, because life is not in your control, and the longer you live, the more things start to get crazy. Maybe it will just be a creepy cat that one day appears at your door and then follows you around for the rest of your life, and then you'll be all, thank God I read Jeannie Gaffigan's brain tumor book because it prepared me for this. Even though I'm terribly allergic to cat dander, I will learn to love this cat, I'll just get some Zyrtec and put a scratching post in my living room because this cat is going to teach me something. And one more little thing. I'm not going to push the God thing down your throat. Let's just get it out of the way that my husband describes me as a Shiite Catholic, and I am a true believer in the power and majesty of the one true God. And those of you heathens who don't get it, you're going straight to H.E. double hockey sticks. Just kidding. Through my diagnosis and recovery, I found myself relying heavily on the power of miracles. I believe that a supernatural force was carrying me through the darkest and most difficult moments of this time in my life. So if anyone has a problem believing in this sort of non-scientific, metaphysical reality, let me rephrase it in an attempt to make it more palatable for you. During my diagnosis, surgery, and recovery, the force was strong with me. I wish I could say that through this journey, I always saw the opportunity in the crisis, and that I faced adversity with optimism and a positive can-do attitude, but that's not what happened. I needed a lot of people to help me make Pear Aid. I'd like to dedicate this book to everyone who helped lift me out of this potential undoing. Even if I didn't mention you by name, you know who you are, and I know where you live. I don't know why I wrote that last bit. That was kind of scary. Most of all, I would like to thank my husband, Jim Gaffigan, who let me silently yell at him while he carried me through the storm. Now that is the power of family and friends. Our last introduction also features family and friends. Issa Rae gives us a history of how she became known as Issa Rae. The introduction from her book, The Misadventures of Awkward Black Girl, published in 2015. My name is Joissa Rae Jope, and I've always wanted a nickname. For the first 12 years of my life, none of my friends were lazy enough to shorten the pronunciation of my name or affectionately bold enough to replace my name with an entirely new word, like Coco or Jolly Rancher. Because every cool person I knew had a nickname, I decided not to wait on anyone to do me the honor. So, in the fourth grade, when a substitute teacher came to take the place of Mrs. Osai, I took the opportunity to publicly anoint myself with a new, lovable identity. I waited as the teacher called roll, for once excited about the impending mispronunciation. It wasn't my first name. If it wasn't my first name, it was always my last name. She couldn't get to the D's fast enough. This time, I'd not only correct her, but I'd intervene with a name that was both easy to pronounce and fun and adventurous, just like me. Joissa, Diop? She asked, pretending to look through the sea of white kids to find my ethnic ass. Here, it's pronounced Joissa Jope, but my friends call me Sloppy Joe. I chuckled as I looked around the class, waiting for the high fives and acknowledgement from my classmates that never came. All that accompanied my announcement was my own laugh, and 2 seconds of silence as the teacher looked at me and nodded, processing the ridiculousness of my suggestion. Right, Joissa, the sub continued. Sarah Dotson? Here, Sarah said. Hot with regret at my blatant attempt to rebrand myself, I sat, defeated, as the teacher continued down the sheet of names. I had conceived my new nickname the previous Friday after a delicious school lunch. One part self-depreciative humor and one part clever wordplay, the name seemed perfect. Now that nobody had so much as looked in my direction after my made-up proclamation, I just felt silly. Who wants to be sloppy anyway? That teacher probably saved herself from a lawsuit. Can you imagine calling the sole black girl in the class sloppy? Good for her indifference. I'm thankful for it. What an absolutely stupid and embarrassing nickname from a painfully childish mind. If I could go back in time and slap all of the idiocy out of my mouth, I would be a busy time traveler. Where my first name has been an individual struggle, my last name has, appropriately, been a family battle. Having spent some of my youth in Senegal, or around Senegalese people in America, I never could have imagined that my monosyllabic family name would have so many alternate, incorrect variations. There's Diop, Diop, Dip, Jip, Jop, and my personal favorite, Depot. In high school, I found no burden in correcting people. It wasn't their fault that they didn't know, and there was no harm done. My annoyance would emerge when people would take it upon themselves to correct me in the pronunciation of my own name. It would go something like this. Diop? Oh, it's pronounced Jope, as in rhymes with hope, I would say with a smile. But it's spelled D-I-O-P, Diop, they would say with confused indignation. Yeah, I know, it's still Jope. Okay, they'd hesitantly resign. This happened way more frequently than it should have, and I couldn't for the life of me figure out why, until one person I went back and forth with for far too long maintained that her doctor's last name was the same as mine, and he pronounced it Diop. I rolled my eyes. Just forget it, I would have said, except her doctor was none other than my father. What the heck, Dad? Family pride much? My dad is a mini-celebrity in South Central on account that his Inglewood clinic has his name in big white letters on the rectangular brick that lines Manchester the rectangular brick building that lines Manchester Boulevard, one of the major streets in the area. My high school bus actually passed the building on its route. I went to high school in South Central, on the border of Compton and Watts, where many of my classmates claimed my father as their childhood pediatrician. Oh, are you related to Mr. Diop on Manchester?
Mr. Jope?
Yeah. No, Dr. Diop.
It's Jope, and yeah?
Okay, if you say so. I confronted my dad about this one day after school. Dad, why are you telling people our last name is Diop?
Because they'll mess it up anyway, he said with a shrug.
But you have to correct them.
I got tired of correcting them, he calmly retorted.
I shook my head. How could I properly defend my name if the man with the accent himself wouldn't co-sign it? I did eventually get that nickname I so yearned for, though it came much later, in my early 20s. I was wall-to-wall chatting on Facebook with Kisha, one of my good friends from college. After 4 years of friendship, she randomly decided to address me as Issa Rae, with no warning whatsoever. After my dear Aunt Rae passed in January of 2008, I had changed my name on Facebook to Joisa Jope, from Joisa Jope, to include my middle name Ray in her honor. Kisha had no idea she had given me both a new way to honor the memory of my aunt and an alter ego for my creative endeavors, though I didn't realize it until I was brainstorming names for my blog, and the name Issa Rae flashed before me. Initially, I wanted a clever name, like Jody, a rap alias I used with my younger brother, or Flojo the filmmaker. But I also needed a name that could house all of my created work, films included. Issa Rae as an alias was just the thing, as it was way cooler than joisaraejope.com, and would protect me in case I ever needed to get a real job. All the trash I talked online would be traced back to Issa Rae, and the HR departments would be none the wiser. Plus, the name Issa, though still easy to mispronounce,
was way more visually digestible than Joe Issa. All this to say, in this book, you'll see my government name referenced a lot. I only started referring to myself as Issa Rae in 2008, so all stories prior to that will reference my birth name. Deal with it. Here's something else you'll have to deal with. My family moved around a lot, and I switched schools every 2 years until high school, so don't even bother trying to keep up. I don't blame you for your confusion. Just know that each school switch represented a new opportunity for me to try, again, to be less awkward, to be a little bit cooler, to be a little bit smarter and wiser. Try being the operative word. As for the stories, I'm coming clean with all the awkward, the embarrassing, the disappointing, the frustrating moments that have made me me, many of which have turned out to be teaching moments, which is why I occasionally throw in an ABG guide for awkward situations in which you might find yourself, such as public grazing, an aid to eating in front of people, or when coworkers attack. Whether you're an ABG, awkward black girl, or a confident white guy, my hope is that you'll learn from my mistakes and, at the very least, laugh at my misgivings. Awkwardly yours, Issa Rae. I don't know about you, dear listeners, but I'm certainly inspired to learn from others' misadventures. I leave you with these words from entrepreneur Eugene Bell Jr., found on everydaypower.com. Aspire to inspire before we expire. And we've run out of time for today's episode of That's a Laugh. We hope you've enjoyed it. Please be sure to listen next time. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. That's a Laugh is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. And don't forget, you can now listen to NCRS on Amazon Echo. Simply say, Alexa, tune in NC Reading Service, and you will hear our broadcasts instantly. Are you enjoying the show? Do you have any amusing quotes or anecdotes you'd like to share? We'd love to hear from you. If you have any comments or questions about this or any other NCRS shows, we ask that you please call us at 919-832-5138. That number one more time is 919-832-5138. Thank you so much for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service this year. We hope that you have a very, very happy and safe new year.